Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is calling on Republican leaders to bring Congress back into session to deal with the Zika virus. Clinton visiting a health clinic near the Miami neighborhood that's the scene of the first U.S. outbreak of the disease. 16 non-travel-related cases have been diagnosed in the area. Clinton wants Congress to provide funding for testing, treatment, and research, either through a measure that's been stalled or through a new bipartisan compromise bill. Officials say an infant whose mother traveled to a Zika-infected area in Latin America died shortly after birth. This in a suburban Houston hospital. It marks the first Zika-related death in Texas. A health official says the infant died a few weeks ago and had microcephaly linked to the Zika virus. Test results linking the death to Zika were confirmed on Friday. The mother had traveled to El Salvador while she was pregnant. The only other confirmed Zika-related death in the U.S. was an elderly Utah man who died in June. He also suffered from other health conditions. Republican Senator Susan Collins says she's not voting for Donald Trump for president. The Maine Republican is citing Trump's complete disregard for common decency, evidenced by his insistence that a judge of Hispanic origin could not be impartial, and also his criticism of Muslim parents whose son was killed in the Iraq War. Collins says she's increasingly dismayed by his constant stream of cruel comments and his inability to admit error or apologize. She says Mr. Trump lacks the temperament, self-discipline, and judgment required to be president. She also suggests she doesn't support the other major party nominee, Democrat Hillary Clinton. Collins' comments were published online by the Washington Post last night. In the New York Times, 50 of the nation's most senior Republican national security officials, many of them former top aides or cabinet members for President George W. Bush, signed a letter declaring that Donald Trump lacks the character, values, and experience to be president, and that he would put at risk our country's national security and well-being. The officials warned that Trump would be the most reckless president in American history. The Republican presidential nominee delivered his centerpiece speech on the economy in Detroit on Monday. He outlined an economic plan based on America First isolationism, supply-side economics, as well as a wish list from the fossil fuel industry. Trump proposed a tax cut for the wealthy and a tax simplification plan. He painted Detroit as a city in dire economic straits with high unemployment and violent crime, and he blamed Hillary Clinton for all of these problems. But the Associated Press fact-checked Trump's speech, and it looked at some of his claims and how they compare with fact. They say Donald Trump changed some of his facts to fit his agenda, pitching shades of truth and misconceptions in what was billed as his major economic policy speech. Clip.
Our roads and bridges fell into disrepair, yet we found the money to resettle millions of refugees at taxpayer expense.
Trump said that the United States has resettled millions of refugees. At the same time, he complained about our infrastructure and said we haven't spent as much on that as we could.
Associated Press writer on the economy, Chris Ruggeber.
And the two things really don't necessarily match. In the past 15 years, we've resettled maybe about 850,000 refugees. So the idea that we've resettled millions isn't accurate. And the cost of resettling those people is about $1.2 billion, which most people would consider a rounding error in the federal budget of over $3 trillion a year. So it's really unlikely that our infrastructure spending has suffered because of resettling refugees.
The 5% figure is one of the biggest hoaxes in American modern politics.
Donald Trump said the unemployment rate is a hoax, which is definitely an overstatement. It has its shortcomings, but it's a number that presidents have cited for decades. It's been collected pretty much the same way by the Census Bureau and Labor Department since World War II. It has become controversial in recent years because many people have stopped looking for work, even if they were unemployed. So when an unemployed person stops job hunting, they're no longer counted as unemployed, and that does help sort of artificially lower the unemployment rate. But at the same time, over 14 million Americans have gotten jobs since 2010, so the rate has also gone down for that reason.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, before NAFTA went into effect, there were 285,000 auto workers in Michigan. Today, that number is only 160,000.
Well, Donald Trump is blaming the North American Free Trade Agreement for hitting auto jobs in Michigan. In fact, the number of auto jobs increased in Michigan after the after NAFTA went into effect. Some of those jobs have certainly since been lost, but many of the jobs, auto jobs in Michigan, have gone to other U.S. states, such as Ohio, Indiana, and even some southern states such as Tennessee.
Donald Trump says his plan for the U.S. economy will produce annual growth of at least 4%, a figure not seen since the final year of Bill Clinton's presidency. Trump tells Fox News that the plan he unveiled yesterday to cut taxes and create jobs makes a 4% growth rate easily attainable. Hillary Clinton dismissed Trump's plan as offering super big tax breaks to huge companies and rich people. The economy's average annual growth rate since the last recession ended in June 2009. Is just over 2%, the slowest since the 1930s. Clinton is expanding her presidential battleground map to include Georgia and Arizona, this according to officials aware of her plans, which will include a six-figure investment across the two states. The move comes amid a shift in Clinton's favor since the July party conventions. Polls suggest Clinton has widened her national lead over Donald Trump and positioned herself to compete even in some traditionally GOP-leaning states. Arizona and Georgia have growing non-white populations that, combined with Trump's struggles among white Republicans, gives Clinton an opening. Both states also have Republican senators up for re-election this fall. Meanwhile, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders put out a call to his supporters in favor of Tim Canova. He is challenging the former head of the Democratic Party, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, in Florida. He says this race is very important for our revolution because if we can win this tough fight in Florida, it will send a clear message about the power of our grassroots movement that will send shockwaves through the political and media establishments. The latest poll shows us, he says, within reach. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Under a new program from the U.S. Department of Justice, police departments throughout the country will now be required to report officer-involved deaths. Rebecca Miles has more.
Up to now, the U.S. Justice Department, through its Bureau of Justice Statistics, relied on law enforcement to voluntarily report police-involved shootings. That voluntary count by the FBI has recorded only about half the true number. That has proved infuriating for criminal justice activists and those trying to press for police reforms when having to back up their arguments with statistics. It was also hard to argue that it wasn't a case of a few bad cops or a rogue police department, but a systematic, nationwide problem of police harassment that can often result in death. That was until cell phones started bringing the horror into the living rooms of everyone, a horror that was experienced previously by black and brown people privately in their lives. It also changed when media outlets like The Guardian started to record the fatalities under The Counted, which they began in 2015, and The Washington Post started capturing the real numbers as well. Under the new program announced on Monday, the Justice Department will start documenting arrest-related deaths, and they'll use media reports and other sources rather than wait for departments to report them voluntarily. The Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics will oversee the program and document causes of death to include physical force, taser shocks, and vehicle crashes in addition to fatal shootings. All 18,450 law enforcement agencies will be required to provide information on arrest-related deaths. A second form will include demographic information and how the encounter occurred. Other forms will go to 685 medical examiners and coroner's offices seeking confirmation of deaths. Officials estimate that this year there will be about 2,100 arrest-related deaths across the U.S. involving over 1,000 different police departments. For WBAI, I'm Rebecca Miles. You can follow me on Twitter at Reb Miles, R-E-B-M-Y-L-E-S.
The African National Congress, the party of Nelson Mandela that helped liberate black South Africans from white minority rule, had its worst election since it took power, according to results released this weekend. The municipal elections will determine how well the parties that unseated the ANC will perform in the 2019 national election. The ANC is led by President Jacob Zuma and has been mired in corruption. He not only failed to rein in corruption, but he has spent millions of taxpayer dollars for upgrades at his private estate, luxury cars for his wives, and put cronies and relatives in senior positions. Critics say he has allowed the needs for basic services to go unmet and generally failed to prioritize the needs of the poor. Even though apartheid ended 22 years ago, South Africa continues to be a deeply unequal country. Its black majority is stuck in poverty with failing schools, and more than one-fourth of South Africans are unemployed. By Monday, ANC leaders were calling for Zuma to step down. Besides corruption allegations and many scandals associated with his administration, Zuma is being faulted for racially divisive statements towards the Democratic Alliance, the DA. He said confused black people voted for the DA but are now coming back to the ANC. Zuma said the DA is the brainchild of apartheid and does not have the interest of black people at heart. Meanwhile, the head of the Democratic Alliance, Mamusi Mamami, is being compared to Barack Obama because of his oratorical skills. He is the first black leader of the Democratic Alliance who holds a master's degree in theology. Back in April, in Parliament, he called for the impeachment of President Jacob Zuma.
Fellow South Africans, honorable members, when we were elected to Parliament, we swore an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution. And the Constitution says that when a president violates the Constitution, he can be removed by this Parliament. It was therefore our duty to table this motion and have it debated today, because we believe in the rule of law and we will do what is right by that law. And of course, we know that our counterparts on the ANC benches do not share our respect for the rule of law.
You are rented, human.
Indeed, in his judgment last week, the Chief Justice was scathing about the conduct of the ANC parliamentary caucus and the presiding officers. So we are under no illusions as to which way they will vote this afternoon. We know that the ANC will fall in line behind President Zuma, but it is not our job to worry about the internal politics of the ANC. Our job is to uphold the Constitution, to expose the truth, and to offer a clear way forward for the country.
Mamami is vowing to fight to fulfill Mandela's vision of a rainbow nation. He says it's upon all of us as South Africans to fight for that ideal of non-racialism. His party won 26% of the vote in the municipal elections. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a plan to save the Fitzpatrick nuclear plant in upstate New York. Chicago-based Exelon, which runs the nearby Nine Mile Point reactors, will assume ownership of the plant from Entergy Corporation. In a speech today, Cuomo spoke of saving the economy of upstate New York, saving union jobs, nothing about the dangers of nuclear power or the move to alternative green energy and the jobs that change would create.
I believe in upstate New York, and I believe in the workforce in upstate New York, and I believe that upstate New York has got the short end of the stick for too long, and I think it's time that the state steps in to help the workforce in upstate New York. I believe in the union movement. I believe the union movement built the middle class and is now protecting and rebuilding the middle class. And I believe in the IBEW and Ted Skirpon and his leadership and the workforce that is the IBEW. I believe this nation and this state needs a clean energy policy that is realistic and that can be implemented before we destroy this planet. And I believe that nuclear plays an important role in that clean energy policy. And I believe if Fitzpatrick closed, 615 families would be devastated. There'd be 615 lost jobs, average wage $120,000, that would be basically irreplaceable in Oswego. I believe if Fitzpatrick closed, it would be a financial crisis for the entire region. Some people estimate Central New York would lose $500 million. Central New York can't lose $500 million. The county can't lose Fitzpatrick as a taxpayer. Town can't lose Fitzpatrick as a taxpayer. And this state cannot lose our supply of nuclear energy because it's important to keep the balance of supply. If you lose nuclear, you'll see that natural gas will spike, or we'll be subject to price increases from other sources because we don't have balanced alternatives.
Governor Andrew Cuomo on saving the Fitzpatrick nuclear plant in upstate New York. Entergy in November announced plans to close the 41-year-old plant, citing high operational costs, low natural gas prices, and a flawed energy market. The $110 million deal, subject to regulatory approval, is expected to close next year. Leading up to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, 10,000 people found their way to a march for climate justice, a march for a clean energy revolution. Buses left our area from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut in the early morning to join with others throughout the country. Here's my report from Philadelphia. They all came to ban fracking, to call for a tax on carbon, and to oppose the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. At the head of the march, the Ramapo Lenape Nation. Vincent Mann with the Ramapo Lenape Nation says it's very important to be at this march.
It's important for us to bring attention, hopefully this will happen with the Democratic Convention going to be here, that we bring attention to banning fracking and to bring renewable and clean energy sources, as well as bringing environmental justice to Native Americans and their tribes throughout this country. So it's our hope that by being a part of this, by being the host nation, that this will be something that's heard and resonated throughout North America. You know, really protect the water, and if we can't protect the water, then there'll be none of us here.
Elijah is with Food and Water Watch. He lives in Pennsylvania in old coal country.
The reason why we're out here marching is because for decades we've been telling people that we need to stop burning fossil fuels, and because we haven't, we're out here marching today in 98 degree weather, sweating, experiencing the full effects of that climate change.
Pennsylvania has been a sort of ground zero for fracking. Lou Hanschuer lives in Butler County, Pennsylvania, where there are 321 fracked wells with 57 violations.
Our sign is for Marcellus Outreach Butler. We're an educational group informing the residents of Butler County of the dangers of fracking. We've been in existence now for 6 years, and we're not that effective because we're fracked. You know, it was almost like we were indigenous people that were invaded by a foreign country. They've raped our land and left us without water.
Without water.
Without water. My water's been poisoned by the fracking. I can't prove it, so I'm up the proverbial creek without a paddle. So, I'm asking my government, what's my recourse? You know, there's supposed to be impact fees in Pennsylvania. My township's impact fees went to build a new building, but didn't help my impact.
Since 2009, Landshuer says his community has been divided between those who are making money from the fracking and those who have been harmed.
And the ones that have been harmed have all lawyered up, and the ones that have, like, settled are usually settled with gag provisions. We have, like, school-age children that can't talk about what happened to them because of a gag order imposed by the courts by the fracking industry.
Landshuer wants the Dems to take a stand to ban fracking. And that's what Alyssa Figueroa with Breast Center Action wants done. She's with the health contingent of the march.
We know the energy sources we choose to run the country affect our health. There's a bunch of toxic chemicals used in fracking and other drilling processes that get in our water, our air, and ultimately our bodies and cause things like breast cancer, and that's why we're here today.
And some of the chemicals being used are secret, aren't they?
They are. And so it's even scarier that the ones that we do know of, 25% are linked to cancer and a whole host of other health problems. And so we know that, and that's just the chemicals we know of. And then there's a whole bunch that we don't. So we need to come out here and tell our elected leaders to start protecting public health.
Besides a ban on fracking, the health contingent wants to stop dirty energy sources and make sure that there's environmental justice for all.
Because right now, people of color and low-income communities are the people that bear a disproportionate burden of the effects of fracking. And so we want nobody to bear a disproportionate burden.
Sam from Baltimore is at the climate march to show opposition to the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He holds a colorful banner which says, "Burn it down," a reference to Bernie Sanders.
He's the man. I don't know that we can, as Americans, get anything that we want done, accomplished in politics until we get the money out. And that's what Bernie is for. And when it comes down to it, my personal opinion is I won't support any candidate that is pro-TPP. So I guess I'm left with Jill Stein.
Shut it down!
Hydrofracking!
Shut it down!
The whole damn system!
Shut it down!
The whole damn system!
The March for a Clean Energy Revolution in Philly sent a clear message that people will come out to fight for a green energy future, for renewable energy, to oppose the TPP, and to keep fossil fuels in the ground.
Shut it down!
Hydrofracking!
Shut it down!
The whole damn system!
Shut it down!
The whole damn system!
Shut it down! Yeah.
In other news, clean energy groups are pressing the Public Service Commission to release an overdue report on making shared solar energy accessible to all New Yorkers, including low-income communities. Andrea Sears reports.
The PSC launched its Shared Renewables Initiative last year with the goal of making solar power available to everyone regardless of where they live, especially people who don't own their homes or can't afford to install solar panels. According to Susan Spencer with the group Rockspot, the state's temporary goal for low-income participation must be a permanent part of the plan.
This target of a minimum of 20% low-income individuals is something that the Public Service Commission absolutely has to include.
The PSC report outlining plans for removing barriers to low-income households and communities that want solar power is 8 months overdue. Things like community-owned renewable energy sources could really benefit those who suffer the most from energy insecurity and environmental injustice. And Spencer notes that some critical regulatory changes could make a big difference.
By being able to participate in off-site solar installations, vast swaths of New Yorkers who were previously unable to go solar can now go in that direction.
Spencer says engaging people of every economic status will be critical to meeting the governor's goal of getting 50% of the state's energy from renewables by 2030. And Spencer points out that having a focus on community-driven projects will do more than increase access to renewable energy sources. The switch to renewables can bring other economic benefits for the community.
So having them be built by New York State companies and be worked on by folks that live in the areas where the projects are being built is a really critical component.
Release of the Public Service Commission report on the Shared Renewables Initiative has been postponed twice and is now scheduled for August 15th. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Young Americans overwhelmingly say they support LGBT rights when it comes to employment, health care, and adoption. That's according to a new Gen Forward survey, which finds 92% of young adults support HIV and AIDS prevention, 90% support equal employment, 80% support LGBT adoption. Across ethnic groups, large majorities of Americans aged 18 to 30 favor training police on transgender issues, government support for LGBT youth organizations, and insurance coverage for transgender health issues. Gen Forward is a survey by the Black Youth Project at the University of Chicago with the AP NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The first of its kind poll pays special attention to the voices of young adults of color, highlighting how race and ethnicity shape the opinions of the country's most diverse generation. In other news, authorities are asking for the public's help as they try to find the killer or killers of a New York City woman whose body was found in woods near her mother's home in central Massachusetts, this after she went out for a jog and didn't return. Residents of Princeton, a sleepy town of about 3,500, 40 miles west of Boston, were urged to use caution after Vanessa Marcotte's body was found Sunday. She was a 27-year-old account manager at Google visiting her mom. Police say they don't know if the attack was random or if Marcotte was targeted. And there have been injuries and a fatality in different parts of the country from unregulated amusement park rides. In Greenville, Tennessee, three people fell from a Ferris wheel at a county fair. A doctor says one of the three girls who fell suffered a traumatic brain injury and remains in critical condition. The Greenville police captain said the three children who fell Monday night at the county fair fell when their seat flipped over. And then there was the accident which took the life of a 10-year-old boy. He died while riding a Kansas water slide billed as the world's tallest. Police say Caleb Thomas Schwab died Sunday of an unspecified neck injury while riding the 168-foot-tall water slide. At least two people who've ridden the water slide over the weekend say shoulder straps snapped or popped off during the ride in the Kansas City, Kansas Park. A spokesperson for police in Kansas City say the death of the boy is considered a criminal investigation because a death was involved. No word yet on federal regulation over rides in private amusement parks. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.